Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's Squiggly Career Podcast. I'm Sarah, one of the founders of Amazing If, and I'm joined by my fellow co-founder, Helen.
Hello everybody.
And we're here, as always, with our weekly dose of career actions, hints, tips, inspiration, all about how to successfully navigate the squiggly careers that we all find ourselves in these days. And today's topic, I think, is a particularly interesting one. It's how to be yourself at work. I've been thinking a lot about how to be yourself at work this week in preparation for this podcast, and it's one of those areas where I think it's really easy to say and it's great in theory, but the actual practice of this is really hard. And we were looking to see, you know, who was kind of the real leader in terms of thought leadership in this area. And there's a guy called Mike Robbins, who's worth checking out, actually. And he's done some videos about bringing your whole self to work, written a book about the topic. And he actually defines this area as showing up authentically, leading with humility, and remembering that we're all vulnerable, imperfect human beings doing the best that we can.
I feel like that's quite, it's almost like we're just doing the best we can, everybody. That's all it is. It's quite honest.
Yeah. But I like the kind of the mix of things. There's actually quite a lot in what
he's
just said.
In it.
And to kind of typify this, I've actually had the kind of the perfect experience today of meeting, not for the first time, a lady called Pip Jameson. And Pip is the founder, one of the few female tech founders, actually, of a company called The Dots. And if you've not heard of The Dots, it's really the LinkedIn version of, but for people who maybe don't wear suits to work. So kind of the LinkedIn for creatives. And actually, I think I was trying to think today of anyone I know who actually wears like a full on suit now to work. And I don't think there are that many people.
No, I agree.
Which is probably why they're expanding so quickly and doing so well. And Pip came in to talk at Gravity Road, the creative company that I work for. And she talked about her journey, her experience, kind of setting up the dots, what had gone well, what hadn't gone quite so well. And to me, you know, sometimes you just meet someone where you just think that is somebody who brings her full self to work. She was, you felt like you were getting to see all the different sides of Pip. You know, the first thing she shares with everybody when she gives a kind of talk is that she is delightfully dyslexic, which I put on our Instagram feed today because I think that's such a lovely articulation of something. And she calls it one of her superpowers. She absolutely recognises the value of a team and kind of coming together to deliver something, incredibly vulnerable about what she's brilliant at, but also where she needs help. And, you know, she showed a lovely diagram of kind of her roller coaster journey of going, look, I'm not perfect. And what I really liked about kind of the way that she sort of described herself was, do you know what, you do have these ups and downs. And what I've started to realise is actually the downs are just really good learning opportunities. And if you see them that way, you get better at kind of coping with them. And I just thought that's also the perfect articulation of growth mindset, of just being like, do you know what, I accept that if I'm running my own thing, the highs are high, the lows are lower. It's kind of a really kind of cliche thing to say, but she said it's definitely true. But she said she used to find that the lows almost, she'd get close to like burnout and be really stressed. And again, even like telling small stories like that, I just came away from that thinking, do you know what, tonight we're going to be talking about being your whole self at work, and I've just met someone who's just brought that to life for me in about half an hour.
So in the context of squiggly careers then, I always think it's quite useful to tie all of the podcast topics we do back to squiggly careers. And I think that being yourself at work is important because we are going to be working for a lot longer in our squiggly careers. We're going to have a lot more choice as well about where we work, the companies we work with, the jobs that we do. And I think to be happy in those choices, you really do want to be yourself at work, because that is an awful long time to pretend to be somebody else and have a different character at work than your true persona. And that isn't what happy careers are made of. So the sooner you can be sort of self-aware enough about what being you at work looks like for you, and then connect that to the places that you work with, the more all the moves and changes that you'll make on your squiggly career, whether that's in your current company or in a new company, the more that is likely to make you happier at work. And I just think it's just a very important thing to look at in the climb. It's almost really foundational. I think we talk about authenticity and we talk about values, and for me, they sit at the heart of a happy career.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, isn't it? Because there's that study by Deloitte that found that more than half of us cover up some part of our identity at work in an aim to kind of try and fit in. And particularly underrepresented groups, whether that's kind of women, LGBT, people from a BAME background, feel more pressure to cover up more of themselves. And I think just from my experience, certainly, of when I've spoken to people who've kind of had challenges with this, and when I've experienced it for myself, it's just exhausting. Because not only are you having to try and do your job, and to try and do your job brilliantly, you're also having to kind of put mental energy and kind of emotion into doing this covering up. And that's really hard work. And I think in a world of work where, you know, we do talk more about there's lots going on, you know, there's lots of talk about kind of mental health and kind of anxiety, this is something that we all need to kind of be more proactive in thinking about, I think, because actually it's probably one of the contributing factors to things like people, you know, getting stressed, finding work actually a source of anxiety rather than a source of, you know, enjoyment and fulfillment.
I agree. I haven't seen the research connecting the two things together, but you've got these issues, you know, 50% of people covering up, and then you've got all the stats about work-related stress, people feeling like a lack of belonging. And I'm like, God, somebody join the dots on this research. This has to be connected.
And maybe you should join those dots, Helen.
With all the masses of time that we've currently
got.
I'll just do it tonight. I think as well, it's squiggly careers can make it a little bit harder as well, because yes, there's bags of opportunity to use authenticity to help you to be happier at work across all of your moves. But I think all of this choice in your career can sometimes create like the shiny object syndrome, where you're like, oh, wow, I could go work for that brand, or I could go do this freelancing thing, or I could go do this. All the choice is quite exciting. And you can sometimes make short-term decisions. I have done this in my career, made a short-term decision around a shiny object, be it a company or a job or something like that. And I actually haven't thought about the longer term. I haven't really thought about that short-term shiny object that's not going to be a lasting source of happiness for you, whereas things like being somewhere that you can be yourself at work, that is what lasting happiness in your careers, that's what it's all about. And I do think that's a bit of a challenge of squiggly careers. And I don't think as well authenticity is just about just go be yourself at work and then it's, you know, then it'll be fine. I do think you have to have some element of management of that. And there's some work done by Harvard Business Review. It's an article, it's from a while ago, it's from 2013, but the title of the article is Be Yourself But Carefully, which is I don't agree with all of the points in the article, because it really is like really managing your authenticity to the extreme, and I'm not sure I buy into all of that. But it does talk about that it can be a double-edged sword to be completely honest, and you really need to think about how your honesty is going to sit in the cultural or organisational norms that you're operating with, and making sure that it helps your reputation in that organisation, doesn't alienate people, it kind of fosters trust, and that actually getting that right is a skill. But I do think it starts with being in the right place in the first time. Like if you're really having to try and manage your authenticity so that you fit the organisational norms, it might be that you're not in the right place to begin with. But I just thought it was quite an interesting, it's not as simple as wherever you are, just go be yourself. I think you have to be a little bit more conscious about that. And today in the podcast, I hope that we can give you some tips if you're listening about how to be authentic, but be aware of how you're sort of using your authenticity to make decisions and to build relationships with other people.
And actually, as well as talking about what you can do for yourself, we're also going to share some ideas for what you can do if you're in a position where you're leading a team or leading a company. How can you create an environment and the conditions where people can bring their whole selves to work? Because I do think it's one of those areas where people often actually need to be given really overt permission to do this, which sounds slightly strange or counterintuitive, like, oh, you've got to give someone permission to be themselves. But actually, even today, I was talking to somebody about how we all choose to work and our kind of different approaches to work. And sometimes, again, how you have to be so transparent about why you want to work in a certain way if you're a leader, because, you know, the shadow that you cast is so significant that you are by default a role model, and that actually just telling people once isn't enough. And we were kind of talking about it in the context of things like, you know, sometimes I'll work in an evening. Because for me, that can suit me quite well, because maybe I've left work early when lots of other people are still working to go and pick up my little boy from nursery. But then do people who work with me feel a pressure to be able to respond to things if I send them at 8 or 9 o'clock at night? And if you're going to do those sorts of things, being so clear with people about going, well, this is something that works for me, but this is not my expectation of you, and actually reiterating that and kind of talking about that consistently, I think is, you know, one of those things where it does sort of really set a tone. So we'll talk about a couple of examples for ourselves about where we've maybe got it right and kind of wrong, just a couple of stories, and then some kind of hints. And yeah, to be honest, we're going to talk about where we got it wrong. let's be honest. And then some hints and tips about what you can do and what you can do maybe for your organisation.
So shall I go first with mine?
Yeah, go for it.
It is more about getting it wrong.
Mine is too.
Mine is about when I was at BP. I'm going to be honest about the company that I was on. And it wasn't by no means a bad company. It was a great company, and it was a really good role that I was doing. But I think I was attracted very much by the challenge. So I moved into an international job when I went to work for BP, and I'd never done that before. And I was getting to work in the China and the US. And I think I have a value of achievement. And I think what I've learned about myself is that can sometimes make me quite blinkered. Like, I see a challenge and it's almost like my achievement driver just shuts out everything else, and it thinks, go get that challenge, you can do it, go after that challenge. And I can ignore sort of little alarm bells or other things. Somebody, when I was at Eon a while ago, a lady called Di, who was in the HR team, called me a corporate animal, and she meant it as a compliment. I know, I knew you'd hate that. She meant it as a compliment. She was like, wow, you're so great at navigating organisations. You're like a corporate animal. And it always stuck with me because I was thinking, oh, I don't know if I want to be a corporate animal.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a compliment.
I know, it doesn't. It sounds like a leopard, doesn't it? Like prowling, prowling around desks. But I think part of the challenge is that I have this kind of achievement driver, and I can also sort of morph into my environments. So I adapt really quickly. I think one of the reasons I've been successful in lots of different industries and organisations is that I can adapt to what looks good there. And that combined with my drive for achievement can sometimes make me a bit blinkered to what actually makes me happy. And, you know, you go forward like 6 months of just being this person who's morphed into the organisational norm, who's on an achievement mission, and you kind of actually take a step back and go, well, this isn't me. And that is exactly what happened to me at BP. I mean, I was basically on a plane all of the time, living away from my husband. No, I didn't have time to do lots of things that I really care about. So it wasn't spending time with friends randomly. Like, I wasn't cooking. I really like cooking. I find it quite creative. I wasn't doing that. I wasn't doing a lot of like networking or development. My worldview was very much about that company. And I just got to the stage where I was just not happy in my role. And I think that the challenge for me was that the persona that I had created for myself, and I think that's important as well, I'd created that for myself to be successful there. No one had made me create that. It was all on me. But that persona of Helen at BP that I'd created ended up being so far away from my actual character that I really wasn't happy. I didn't feel like I was being authentic. I didn't feel like, as a result, the relationships that I was building with people were very authentic, because they were sort of connecting with the persona and not the real me. And I just knew that I had to change. And for me, it was quite a significant change. I left to go and kind of be myself in a company. Perhaps I could have maybe moved to a different part of the business and done it there, but that was the outcome really of me letting that go on for far too long. And I think what I learned about that is that go with your gut instinct sometimes. So don't let shiny objects distract you. Like, I probably knew some of that stuff when I was going through the interviews. I could probably see that I would have to morph a little bit to be successful there, but I just sort of ignored that because the achievement thing was so big for me. And I think there was I would have asked myself, if I'd asked myself the question, can I do well here, which was kind of short term, which is what I did ask myself, versus the can I be myself here, which is more kind of about long term happiness, I would have got to a different outcome. I was just focused on the can I do well here short term view. And I'd ask myself those questions now for future roles.
Yeah, that's a really nice practical action, I think, for people. I really like that distinction between can I do well here, which, that, you know, we're all increasingly very adaptable in squiggly careers, getting used to change. And that's one of the things that makes us all kind of enjoy and thrive in the different opportunities we're all exploring. But actually also layering on a different question and going, and can I be myself? And it's almost going, this is not an and or situation. This is a, you need the and in the middle.
Yeah.
You want to be able to do well and be yourself in an ideal world, I guess. One other action that might actually be helpful if you're listening to Helen and thinking about that character and persona diagram, sometimes when we're running workshops about this, we'll get people to almost imagine drawing like a pie chart for yourself. And like, what percentage would you colour in where you feel like you're taking your true character to work? And what percentage of your time do you feel like you're putting on a persona? And as we sort of talked about, this is not a black or white where you go, oh, of course, I'm just my 100% true self all of the time, because we recognise that there is a level of, sophistication and nuance and thinking about the culture that you're operating in. So the likelihood of that being 100% or even potentially even aspiring to 100%, I don't think is what we're recommending. But if you're looking at that and going, wow, 50% of my time, I actually feel like I'm not being myself. That's 50% of your time where you're having to work exceptionally hard to kind of be someone else, or you're kind of having to put on a kind of a persona. And that, just recognizing how hard that is to do for a sustained period of time. Most of us can do it for a little while, but it won't last. And at some point it'll become something you'll need to do something about.
Mm.
And so my example, actually, I've got two examples of where, again, I got it wrong. I feel like today we're just talking about the bad stuff.
Should we do it? At some point we'll do some good stuff.
Yeah, maybe in the hints and tips, they're more kind of good things. I think early on in my career, I got it pretty wrong in that I thought there was a kind of type around what it looked like to be successful. And I thought that I needed to be an extrovert to be successful at work. And so I spent time, energy and effort almost displaying extrovert behaviours, feeling like that's the way I needed to behave to be successful, to do well. So almost I felt that, to answer Helen's first question about can I do well, I felt like I had to be an extrovert. And then my second question, can I be myself? I was like, well, no, because I've got to do well, I've got to do the extrovert thing. And it actually took me quite a long time to realise that it was okay to be an introvert. And it was probably, I was probably a good 6 or 7 years into my career when some of the work around introvert leaders and Susan Cain's work on quiet was being popularised, that I remember reading that, really connecting with it, and then starting to discover and explore examples of people who I really admired and I thought who had done really brilliant things, who clearly were more introverted kind of in their nature, and then that being okay. One of the things I would really watch out for, though, is this can't be an excuse. I sometimes hear myself doing this, definitely, and hear it kind of in other people when we're kind of doing one-to-one coaching, is once you start to have this, you'll hopefully improve your self-awareness. Sometimes that can kind of tip into going, oh, and that's the reason why I don't do something that actually is important. So the example for me is always going, oh, well, now that I spent the last 6, 7 years being a really happy introvert, maybe that just means I don't need to ever socialise with people or ever go to events. Or maybe I should just like stop all networking. And actually, that's not the point. I think the point is you then go, okay, I recognise that I'm an introvert and that's a positive thing. And actually then I think about how do I make sure that I build relationships in a way that works for me, feels like the right way for me to do it. It doesn't mean that you then don't build relationships. And so I think just watch yourself if you're kind of going, oh, well, now that I know this about myself, I sort of don't have to do something, or it's a kind of get out of jail free card. Because that's sort of, unfortunately, you know, certainly for me, that's not the way it works. For most of us, whatever bringing your whole self to work looks like, it doesn't mean that there aren't times where you do put on a persona. And for me, that's probably a really good example of one where, like, my character isn't 100%, because as part of my job, I do sometimes have to go to really big events with lots of people I don't know, or stand on stage and talk to lots of people I don't know. And that is me putting on something of a persona. I'm still very much myself at those events, but I have to work that little bit harder, you know, stand up a bit straighter, smile a bit wider, etc., to kind of get myself in the right frame of mind. So there is just a bit of that persona, and that in those instances for me is a useful thing, because that just gives me that kind of extra boost of energy, because I need that, because I'm having to work harder. But I really feel that I'm working harder in those moments, and then recognise that afterwards I sort of need time to kind of relax and rejuvenate.
I was just thinking when you were talking then about, like, we do some of that stuff together on a big stage together talking to people, and I never feel that you are putting on a kind of persona to do that stuff. So I was wondering whether actually sometimes maybe it helps if you've got a friend to be authentic, you know, like, so in work, yeah. If you're surrounded by some people that you not everyone might know or trust you. Let's say you're starting in a new job, but there's one person you know in that company, that might give you some comfort in being yourself. Because I just feel like when we stand up together on a stage, I never feel that you're trying to be something you're not, because we're sort of in it together and supporting each other. So just, it might be an interesting dimension of, place some support for, if you're an introvert, how you do that stuff. Basically get yourself a buddy who's maybe an extrovert, so that you balance each other, but also just maybe somebody else that you know and trust can help you to be authentic, so you don't feel like you're authenticity is a bit about vulnerability, but maybe having someone you know and trust near you helps to manage that a little bit, so it doesn't feel so scary.
I also think from personal experience, it comes from practice, and it comes from almost like practicing being yourself and then realizing that it's true. A really good thing.
True.
So if I go back to that original definition of thinking, right, leading with humility, being vulnerable, it's okay to be imperfect. So the whole, you know, focus on your strengths, don't worry about your weaknesses. Lots of things that we've talked about in lots of previous podcasts. I think I've just practiced those things in lots of ways over the years. And then at some point you almost reach a tipping point where you go, oh, I now feel confident enough to bring my whole self to work most of the time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, this podcast is actually a really good example. If I think earlier in our career, would we have talked about all of the things that we've done wrong and we probably wouldn't have done, because I don't think we would have felt that was great for our brand. Whereas now I think actually the more authentic we are, the better it is, because we can inspire other people to be authentic. So I think this podcast is actually a really good example of probably the shift that you and I have gone on in realizing how important and valuable it is to other people for you to be authentic, because it creates you're talking earlier about a manager can create the space for someone to be authentic, and sort of hopefully this creates a space for other people to realize that actually being authentic is a really good thing at work, and pretending you're someone else really isn't for your happiness or the relationships you'll build.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Should we go on to a few of the kind of top tips that we started to think about in terms of like what you can actually do if you want to do this more?
Yes, let's. I'll start with the ones that I think are helpful for you as an individual, and then maybe if Sarah talks through the ones for managers and companies. So for my three then, for if you're kind of listening to this and you're like, okay, how can I be more, I buy it, Helen and Sarah, but how can I specifically be more authentic at work? So the first thing is potentially the hardest, but that is about being self-aware. So authenticity begins with self-awareness. You can't be yourself at work if you don't really know what being yourself actually means. And that means thinking about what your values are, where your emotions are triggered at work, where your vulnerabilities or your confidence gremlins are, what you're great at, where your strengths are, how it adds value, maybe some of the things that you're not great at and you need to ask for help. Now, to be really helpful for you on those things, we've done podcasts on a lot of those things. We've done a podcast around your strengths, we've done one around your values, and we've done loads around things about sort of vulnerabilities around confidence gremlins. So search through our, I don't know if you can say back catalogue, but our past podcast episodes, and there might be some things that can help you increase your self-awareness. And it's only really when you have that self-awareness that you can be in a place to think about what to reveal to who when. And that's my second tip, which is that you need to think about how you share appropriately. It's back to that Harvard Business Review article, that be yourself but carefully. You really want to think about the right place and the right time to share your authenticity, and also the style by which you'll do it. We'll link to an article that talks about some different styles that don't really work. So things like the
Some of these words I'm just looking at are really awful.
In the article, it talks about like profiles that don't really work in terms of like being authentic, and it talks about the bumbler who just sort of mumbles along and doesn't really make a point. The open book, so the person that just assumes everybody wants to know everything. It talked about an example of a woman who was going into a meeting with people she didn't know, and the very first thing she started talking about was how a baby threw up on her that morning. Now that is very real to that woman, but
I think I've done that.
In the article, it kind of implied that that wasn't the right thing to do for that audience if it was with your team who knew you already.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's just right place, right people, right time. And so it's quite interesting just to read the article and have a look at those different profiles. But one of the key points that I took away was that it said that intimate stories strengthen relationships. They don't actually establish them. So in that situation about the lady having a baby that was sick on her, that might strengthen an existing relationship, but it's unlikely to establish a brand new one. And I thought that was interesting. And it said that basically sharing too much personal information too quickly can break sort of, it calls it socio-cultural norms, which sounds very dramatic, doesn't it? But it can kind of break the way things are normally done, and that can sometimes make people feel a bit uncomfortable and maybe make you look I said a bit unbalanced, which I thought was a bit harsh. But I think the overriding point is share appropriately. Think right place, right time. Just be a little bit conscious about what you're sharing with who. And the third thing that I think is really interesting as an individual for you to spend some time thinking about in terms of your authenticity is to reflect on what is holding you back from being yourself at work. And specifically think about, are there some assumptions that are holding you back that you might need to test in some ways? So you might think, do you know what, if I ask for help, you know, if I'm going to be authentic, that means admitting to some things that I don't know, and that probably means asking for help. And I'm don't want to do that because I'm assuming that people won't think I'm good at my job, you know, if I'm a manager or something like that. And what you really need to do is test that assumption, because, you know, to that point in particular, I have always found asking for help is a very good way of building relationships and learning at the same time. So just have a think about, if you're thinking you're not quite yourself at work at the moment, just really think about what assumptions are you carrying that could be holding you back, and think a little bit about how you can test those, because a lot of the time they are not true. They are just sort of our internal dialogue that we are holding, and it's letting us sort of hold us back.
And so then as a manager, so if you're managing a team or if you're leading a company or a function, I think there are some things that you can do to set an environment where this is possible for people. So we talked previously about giving people permission, and it's always like hard to overstate, I think, how important that can be, because, you know, the whole you've got to kind of see it to believe it. And so I think that's probably the first thing is, you know, how can you set the tone? What actions can you take that let people know that it's okay to bring stuff that's maybe not 100% work related into kind of the work environment? So one of the things that we're actually doing at the creative agency I work for before Christmas is something called Creativity Curated. And that's because I sense and actually know that there's some really interesting creative stuff happening in the agency I work for outside of kind of agency day-to-day life, because these people are all incredibly creative. And I want to kind of create an opportunity in a forum for people to talk about that and explore that, because we really value curiosity. So we're sort of doing our equivalent of TED, essentially, in a sort of less strict and formal setting. And actually, I've done something previously when I was at Sainsbury's where it was actually a bit more like TED, where the brief to everybody, I was doing a development session for a team, and the brief was, you've got 5 minutes to talk about something you're passionate about outside of work. And that day was fascinating because you got to know in 5 minutes so much about somebody. I remember somebody talking about that in a previous life they'd been a pig farmer, which I just got amazing. Absolutely no idea about. So that was amazing. That was so interesting. One guy was really interested in like the old underground like network of tunnels under London, like old maps and stuff like that. Someone else, she was really passionate about a brand called Trader Joe's, which is over in the US. And what's
like
interesting
a
now?
Or something, or
no, no, they're like a supermarket.
Yeah.
I've been in them in over, kind of not quite as posh as Whole Foods. I think you're hopefully allowed to say that. our US listeners, of which I think we do have some, can let us know the best way to describe it. But still very kind of ethical. And like when I went over, we went there and kind of bought food when we were in our self-catering place.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that, that is probably, I'm trying to think how many years ago now, maybe 7 years ago, that session, it was probably only four or five people. And I can still remember every single one of them. Because they really stick with you. So even
Isn't
then,
it
just
true,
talking
like,
about them,
people's authenticity. Just in case it helps people listening for some ideas on this with the like setting the tone for things. There's a couple of things I did at Microsoft in the same vein. So the first was I did, and the second someone in my team did. The first one that I did was I had a team meeting, and everyone had to bring almost like a prop that showed something that they enjoyed doing outside of work. So I think I brought I brought a picture of when I was on TV doing that that cooking program on TV. Somebody else was like obsessed with almond butter, so they basically bought in a pot of almond butter. Somebody else kind of a big gardener and worked on one of those community gardening projects, and she showed a picture of her and the gardening project. There was all kinds of things, but suddenly you got this like complete insight into people's lives outside of work. And so that's a really good exercise to do, get people to bring a prop and just create like, you know, an hour in your team meeting to have that discussion. Another one that someone in my team when I was at Microsoft organized recently was you had to pick a piece of music that you really had a story for you. There was like a story behind why you like that piece of music. And then we submitted it all to the person who was running the meeting in advance, and they created like a Spotify playlist. So in the team meeting, they played the like 30 seconds of your music. And then you had to tell people, you know, what this meant to you. So I think mine was Mary Poppins, A Spoonful of Sugar, because I'm like the eternal optimist. And my old manager once called me Mary Poppins because I'd always just be pulling different things out of a bag, not literally. But the most fun one was this guy. The guy actually organised the meeting, and his song was like the Hammer Time song, you know.
Yeah.
And it turned out he was had been like a sort of semi professional darts player who had his own theme tune when he walked onto the darts board.
Oh my god, that's amazing!
Thing. And I was like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. So they are fun exercises that can. They're fun, but there's a serious thing in there about getting to know people. And to Sarah's points, that's the stuff that you remember, not someone's job title.
Yeah, and I think the almost like link to that, anything that you can do to create opportunities for people to connect within your organisation is a really good thing. And you can connect around different almost like passions or interests. And this goes, what I really like about these things is they go beyond kind of team boundaries. So things like whether it's, you know, learning and development is actually a really good example. I find that in every company I've worked in, there are always some people who are really passionate about learning and development, very much people kind of in our tribe. And every time I've ever created anything that people could be part of, it's just been a way of kind of getting to know other people at a different level. People tend to, in those kind of environments, bring more of themselves because they're kind of doing something slightly different. And that's quite a work-related one, but sometimes it's even just stuff like, I don't know, work run clubs or yoga clubs, or like we have a thing called Bring or Bake. I don't think it's called Sale.
You like, don't sound very sure if you've never bought anything or baked.
No, I have clearly neither done. I've actually never done either, which I'm not sure why. I definitely must have missed like the rota. Or actually, I think it might be done on a Thursday when I'm doing Amazing If stuff. So okay, that's probably okay.
If it wasn't on a Thursday, you would be baking something, would you?
No. I'd bring something. I could bring something. But what's really nice about that is it also does create, even within our company, there are those people who clearly do bake. And they're amazing. And you can see that people go, oh, I hope it's going to be their turn because that's something that they're really good at. I can't imagine anyone would ever say that about me. But you can just see by creating those small opportunities for connection. And they're just, you know, they can be like really small things. Again, it's just giving people that ability to just describe and bring some stuff from outside of work into the work environment. Like people love, even like work, I remember like work netball teams and people are like, oh, you like playing netball, I like playing netball.
Yeah.
And people get, you get really excited about it for some reason.
I feel like we should have a netball bingo card for our podcast to manage to squeeze netball in again.
Yeah, I don't talk about it that much. It's not going well at the moment. I've not played much recently. And then our third tip, which we have talked about to an extent already, is just if you are in a position where, you know, you're accountable for things and people are kind of looking up to you, just be really aware of how important role modelling is. So, you know, being vulnerable, asking for help. Yeah, as we've done on this podcast today, talk about things that haven't gone to plan and kind of what you've learned. And, you know, it's often really small things that you say that really kind of stick with people. Like one of the things that I make a real effort to do, and sometimes it's hard because you are trying to you're being professional when you're at work and you're trying to bring all your, you know, all the great things that you have at work. But sometimes I do have to leave meetings now to go and pick up my little boy from nursery. And there's such a temptation to like make an excuse or not really say why you're leaving. And I do make a point of saying, that's why, you know, like, that's why I'm going. Or if you're late for something because something's gone wrong in the morning because of that said little boy, which also happens quite a lot. I saw a really lovely thing the other day. I think I saw it on someone that we followed on Instagram, where just repositioning how you position something. So if you say you were late because your little boy had been ill that morning, you'd have to sort something out, rather than saying sorry and being really kind of overly apologetic, you actually just say to people like, thank you. Or thank you, I like really appreciate the fact that's not ideal, but it's still more positive from you. But equally, you're being vulnerable about, of course it was stressful and like, thanks for understanding, but you're not kind of going overly into sorry. And I was like, oh, that's just a really nice little tip there that I'm going to steal.
Yeah, I agree. So a quick recap then on some of those actions then. So as an individual, three actions that you can take are to be self-aware, to make sure you're sharing appropriately, and to reflect on what's holding you back. And then as a manager, the actions that you can take are to set the tone for vulnerability, to make it acceptable, to create opportunities for people to connect in and outside of your team, and then also to role model these behaviours.
And so that's everything for this week. We hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, resources on the website. Please do keep sharing the podcast. Please keep telling us what you think. Give us feedback. And any ideas for future episodes, we're always up for recommendations for kind of different ideas. If you don't already follow us on Instagram, please head over. We're just at Amazing If. We've got a real mission to get to like 1,000 hardcore Instagram followers by Christmas. And I think
we might do it.
We're on about 920, I think.
Have you been looking? Yeah, I'm like, oh, I really want to get to 1,000. I actually really want to get to 10,000 because then we can share links with people on Instagram stories. So what I really want, but that feels like a bit of a stretch to get to by Christmas.
Yeah. So. And do you know what as well? I sort of talk to brands in part of my other job about how it's not just about followers. You know, it's all about quality, not about quantity.
No, but I'm thinking like if we're at 10,000, then you can share links with people. So when I do my daily Instagram career tip, which if you don't know that I do, not Sarah, she knows, but you're listening, I do. I always talk about, oh, and this is a great resource, go here. And I have to like cut and paste the link, which you can't click on. And so if we're at 10,000, then I can have it as like a clickable link. It'll make it so much better.
So basically we want the functionality.
Yes, I'm all about the functionality. That's what I need.
So what are we going to talk about next week?
So next week, we're going to talk about how you can create a vision for your career. So in terms of squiggly careers, it's very difficult to do plans because really they don't last. Most of us are going to be doing jobs that don't even exist yet. So actually, it's much more positive to think about what's a vision for your career. But that can sound a bit big, a bit scary, maybe a bit woo-woo. So we're going to make it really practical. We're going to talk about practical steps that you can take to create a vision for your future and your career, and so that you can make sort of decisions now about what you're doing that will bring you closer in line with that.
So that's everything for this week. As ever, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it, and we do love hearing from you. So please do get in touch if you have 5 minutes. If not, we'll look forward to speaking to you all next week. Thanks for now. Bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.